Wesley didn't know what to say, so he didn't say anything. He handed me a napkin from the glove compartment to wipe my nose. Every once in a while, he patted my arm. "I don't want to go home," I said just before we reached our exit. "Can we go somewhere else?"
"Sure, of course."
He veered across traffic and took the exit for Laurelwood. He parked near the arcade, and we got out of the car. Derek shed his black leather jacket and threw it in the back seat. Underneath, he was wearing his usual black T-shirt and black jeans. We crossed the street to the boardwalk, walking the length of it until it stopped. Then we kept going, shuffling along the sandy shore to the jetty where it pointed into Puget Sound. The water whispered as it glided across the sand under our feet, sloshing as it slid between the jagged rocks that framed the edges of the beach. The sharp scent of salt and something softer like honeysuckle painted the air. A chorus of birds chirped, their song rising with the roll of the surf.
"I'm sorry about Kendall,"
Derek said. His eyes were a deep shade of blue, like a midnight sky. The wind tousled his chocolate curls.
"Is there anything I can do?"
He looked so worried that I forced a small smile and touched his cheek. He was the steadiest person in my life. He'd promised never to lie to me, and I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he never would. And now here he was, offering me comfort when I needed it most. "Thank you," I said, "for everything." When I was with him, I wasn't scared of the truth. I wasn't scared of the future. I wasn't angry at my mom's lies or how neurotic she could be. Everything seemed as pure and shiny as a diamond. Even Kendall's rejection hadn't tainted that. Derek held my eyes for a long time, and that spark between us flared, the heat that drew us together like magnets. Inevitably, we fell into each other, my mouth moving eagerly on his. He brushed my hair away from my face. His breath fanned my lips. His mouth parted and the kiss deepened. I willed my heart to stop beating so fast. It knocked hard against my chest. This was nothing like with Tyler. I'd loved him since we were kids, I realized. Madison's lies, his absence, the fact that I had a boyfriend, none of it mattered. I'd loved him from the first time I sat across the dinner table from him when I was 5, to the time he'd carried me home after I sprained my ankle rollerblading when I was 11, to now, this very moment. It amazed me that the words didn't come tumbling out of me. I could feel them like 3 small pearls in my mouth. "I love you." I slid my fingers into his hair as we gasped for air, consumed by each other.
"Olivia."
His mouth, pressed against mine, went suddenly flat.
"Olivia."
Both his hands pushed against my shoulders, and suddenly I stood a few feet away from him, my head spinning.
"I'm sorry."
He shook his head.
"I shouldn't have."
He walked a few steps away, his shoes denting the sand. "You don't like me?" I asked softly. It sounded childish, and it wasn't how I meant it. I just meant he didn't feel the same about me that I did about him. Now that I knew I loved him, how could I ever go back to pretending I didn't? Derek took 2 long strides back to me, looking almost angry.
"That's not true. Don't be silly. I do care about you, but you have a boyfriend."
"You care about me?" Derek smiled, put a hand on my cheek.
"Of course I do. I've cared about you for as long as I can remember. It's torture knowing you have a boyfriend. Why do you think I was so pissed off when I first got back from New York?
A delicious warmth unfurled in me, a loosening of happiness in my chest. I'd never felt this way with Tyler, this deep connection on a visceral level. I'll see Tyler on Sunday. I'll break up with him then. My phone rang then, jangling in the space between us. The screen flashed with Kendall's information. I held the phone up for Derek to see. What do I do? I asked.
I think you already know the answer to that.
Chapter 20. Abby. November. Later that evening, I pulled up to Anthony's house. I peered at it through the thickening twilight. Nestled amidst a row of Cape Cods, painted a bright robin's egg blue that was cracked and peeling, it looked like it was in desperate need of a lick of paint, and maybe a bit of gardening. The grass was short and waterlogged. A handful of scraggly rhododendron bushes clung to the front steps. I stepped out of my car and tugged at the soft pink cashmere sweater I'd pulled on over my skinny jeans. I smoothed my hair, wondering fleetingly if I looked okay, then hating myself for caring. It wasn't like this was a date. But what if he thought it was a date? Shit, I dove back into my car, breathing hard. What was I thinking? The urge to ask Olivia if this was okay swelled inside of me, and I realized that not only had I lost my daughter, I'd lost my best friend. I clawed a tissue from my purse and swiped fresh tears from my eyes. I just wanted my girl to come home. I was already 15 minutes late, so I took a shaky breath and got out of the car. At the door, I inhaled deeply and knocked. It swung open right away. "Abby, come inside." Anthony looked delighted to see me. He pulled me into a warm and beautiful living room. Light-stained hardwoods glistened under my feet. Small oil paintings were hung through the room, indistinct splashes of color. To the left was a homey sitting area with an L-shaped couch and widescreen TV. To the right was an open-plan country-style kitchen with a breakfast nook and French doors leading to a deck. It had the cozy feel of a much-loved home, a stark contrast to the exterior of the house. "Sorry I'm late," I mumbled. "No problem," he said easily. He was probably the most laid-back person I'd ever met. He pulled a chain across the door behind me and ran a hand over the thick stubble on his chin. "Sorry, I have to lock my mom in so she doesn't wander." Anthony crossed the room to an elderly woman who sat on the overstuffed couch. Her eyes were glued to an episode of Jeopardy on the TV. Anthony set a large hand gently on her shoulder. "Mom, this is Abby." The old woman looked up at me, her blue eyes clouded with confusion. "Laura?" "Not Laura, Mom. Abby." "Hello, dear." Her gaze traveled back to the TV. Anthony tilted his head toward the kitchen and I followed him. "Who's Laura?" I asked.
"That was my sister."
"Oh, I'm sorry."
"That's okay."
"How's your mom doing?"
I asked, tentatively. It felt like prying, but right to ask. Anthony ran a hand through his hair. He looked exhausted, smudges of purple stark beneath his eyes. "Last night she went ballistic because I wouldn't give her the car keys. I couldn't get her to go to bed. But today, she's been really calm. So, you know, good days and bad. It must be hard." "I don't get it right all the time," he admitted. "But I love her. You don't have to be right 100% of the time to show you love someone. And she doesn't have to be perfect to be well-loved." A sleety rain started to fall, pattering against the skylight in the kitchen. I sat at the kitchen table, and Anthony slid a piece of pizza from a Domino's box onto a plate and handed it to me. I stood and reached for it, but my fingers missed and I fumbled the plate. Anthony moved to catch it, but accidentally grabbed my hand instead. I felt a jolt of electricity in my fingertips and stepped back as the pizza plopped face down onto the floor. "Oh, God, I'm sorry. Let me clean it up." My face warmed with embarrassment. Anthony smiled and waved me away.
"Honestly, don't worry about it.
At least the plate didn't break. I think I've broken about 5 this year. I only have 3 left." He wiped up the mess and handed me a fresh slice of pizza, then started cutting a wedge into small, precise pieces. I sat down and looked around. There were plants and paintings everywhere, a large fern in one corner, and spider plants hanging from a shelf above the sink. A copy of Barack Obama's memoir sat on the table next to me. "I called a friend of mine who works in Portage Point," he said as he got to work dicing the second slice. "He said both Sampson and McNally are strong detectives with a solid solve rate."
"Then why wouldn't they investigate Olivia's fall?" I asked.
"I guess if they were told not to, they'd focus their energy elsewhere."
"But why would they be?"
Anthony ate a quick bite of pizza, chewing as he thought.
"I don't know," he admitted. "Let's think about what we do know. 1, Madison wasn't talking to Olivia. 2, Olivia knew that her father was Gavin Montgomery, and she'd met her half-sister Kendall. And 3, Tyler lied about meeting up with Olivia after the barbecue."
"Actually," I interjected, "Tyler told me he got that text from Olivia saying to meet him at the barbecue, but she never showed up."
"What else do we know?"
"She had some texts on her phone from somebody listed as D. They were romantic, signed with kisses. I think the father of Olivia's baby has a name that starts with D."
"Can you think of any friends Olivia had with names starting with D?"
"Not in her group, but I'm sure somebody at school does."
My phone rang from my purse on the island, and I stood to get it.
"Hello?"
There was no reply. A few seconds later, the beep, beep, beep of an empty line echoed in my ear.
"Another hang-up?" Anthony asked.
The phone rang again before I had a chance to answer him.
"Hello?
Abby?" Sarah's anxious voice filled the line.
"Don't hang up."
"Sorry," I murmured to Anthony. "I just need to..."
"No worries, I'll take this to my mom."
Anthony grabbed the plate of diced pizza and headed toward the living room. I turned toward the wall.
"What do you want?"
I murmured.
"Abby, thank God you answered. Look, we need to talk. I want to..."
"I can't do this right now. I'm at Anthony's house."
"Abby, listen."
"Not right now." I pressed end and stared at my phone. If only she'd told me the truth. I shut the thought down. I felt shaky all over, my body swaying as a wave of emotion fizzed in my bloodstream. My earlier urge to speak to Olivia, to see her one last time, rushed over me again.
"Are you okay?"
Anthony's voice from behind me made me jump.
"Yes.
No. I mean, I need to get going. Thanks for, I waved at my untouched pizza. "This." I felt suddenly as if I were trapped inside an hourglass. The sand trickling onto me, the weight bearing down on me. 13 weeks until the baby was born. 13 weeks. And I was sitting here eating pizza, being all buddy-buddy with a virtual stranger. I was running out of time. I grabbed my bag and brushed past Anthony. My hands fumbled with the lock on the front door. A surge of emotion heaved through me. I had to get away before I fell apart. The rain had eased and a full moon gleamed through racing, white-rimmed clouds. My shoes clipped harshly against the sidewalk.
"Abby!"
I wanted to get in my car, but Anthony was suddenly in front of me.
"Are you okay?"
Soft moonlight slid over him, turning his eyes a silvery green. In his face was nothing but honesty and kindness.
"I'm fine. I just need to go home."
I tried to move past him, but he didn't budge.
"You aren't in any condition to drive," Anthony said. "Let me drive you."
I stared at him in shock. He'd been in court all day, then in a support group, helping other victims of crime, and then he'd come home and cared for his ailing mother. It was what he did, I was noticing, tried to fix all the wounds of the world. "Are you kidding?" I snapped, suddenly inexplicably angry. "You look like you haven't slept in weeks. I'm not as emotionally strung out as you. You've had a difficult time. Let me drive. I can get a taxi back. Your mom, she's safe. I've locked the door and her night nurse is on the way." I huffed out a harsh breath. "I didn't ask for this." I meant his concern, but he misunderstood. No one does. I tried again to move past him. I was just another problem to fix. I didn't want to be some fucking damsel in distress. I didn't need him. "Abby, let me help you."
"Why? Why do you even want to?"
He looked surprised, a shadow crossing his face. "I know what it's like to lose someone you love, to feel powerless to know why. My sister was killed, and most of my life I didn't have any answers. Her case was only solved 4 years ago. The detective..." He swallowed hard and looked like he wanted to say something, but he shook his head. "I can't tell you how much the detective helped me. Laura was just another cold case, a file in a box. When they solved her murder, I felt years of anxiety slip away. It didn't bring her back, but it mattered to me how the pieces fit together. So I know what you're going through." A current of understanding cut through my resistance. He saw it and moved toward me. "Come on." He held his hand out for my keys. "Let me drive you home." I wavered, then finally gave him my keys and climbed into the passenger side. Suddenly, I was tired to my very core. I felt like a stuffed animal that had been cut open and had all its insides scooped out. "Fine." I told myself I was agreeing because I was too exhausted to argue. But the truth was, deep inside, I didn't want to be alone. Outside my house, Anthony turned the engine off. He got out, the car dipping to release his weight, and came around to open my side. He guided me up the stairs, took my keys from my numb fingers, and opened the front door. He turned on a lamp and pulled a cover over me as I sank into the pillowy softness of my couch. Then he headed for the door. "Thanks," I whispered. My voice stretched with tiredness and sadness and so many other things. "It won't always be this hard, Abby. Get some sleep." He smiled gently, then locked the handle and pulled the door shut behind him. As I drifted off, I realized something. As much as I liked to think that I was better off on my own, maybe it wasn't true. There were people who wanted to help me, people who cared about me without any agenda, like Anthony, like Lizzie and Kelly, and Sarah.
Chapter 21. Olivia. July. Derek's and my footsteps echoed in the mist as we crossed the zigzag bridge, heading from his house to mine. The air smelled of damp soil after last night's rain, and I inhaled the rich scent.
"What time's Kendall going to be there?"
Derek asked, tucking me tighter under his arm. When he did it, I felt treasured, not trapped. "She said noon?"
"Do you think she'll show?"
I thought back to last week when she'd bailed on me at Starbucks. I was totally ready to write her off, but then she'd called me in tears. She said she was scared of her dad finding out about me during an election year when the media could find out. She'd offered to drive out to meet me. It sort of made sense. Plus, if she didn't show up, at least I'd already be home. "I hope so, but who knows?" I shrugged. My phone pinged. "Kendall. We still on for today?" "Hold on," I murmured to Derek. I hefted myself up so I was sitting on the bridge's low concrete barrier wall and typed a reply. "Yeah, my house. You still have a dress?"
Kendall. Yeah. Driving to you, be there 12-ish. Kendall. Saw us again about last week. Me.
It's okay.
See you later.
I put the phone away and looked at Derek. His face had gone pale as an envelope. What's wrong? I asked.
You ready to come down from there now?
I leaned back and peered over the edge of the bridge to where the zigzag river gurgled below. Derek, are you scared of heights? I couldn't imagine Derek afraid of anything.
No,
he denied emphatically, but his face was pinched tight. I knew I was right.
Ooh, I teased. I'm so close to the edge.
I laughed and stood up on top of the concrete barrier, walking like a gymnast, arms flung out for balance. Heights had never bothered me, and anyway, if I fell in the river below, I was a great swimmer.
Come down from there, Olivia.
Derek's voice was laced with anxiety, and I realized the joke had gone too far.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I hopped down and wrapped my arms around his waist, smiling up at him.
I was just teasing you a bit.
He brushed my hair back from my face and blew out a shaky breath.
Fuck's sake. That wall is too low.
I was safe. Sheesh. I didn't know you were so afraid of heights.
I'm not afraid. It just makes me a bit nervous when the girl I like is perched on the edge of a 50-foot drop. I'd prefer you stay safe.
I stiffened in his arms. You sound just like my mom. Derek stepped away from me, scraped a hand through his hair.
Look, I'm sorry. I don't want to sound like your mom or anything. I'm scared of heights, but that doesn't mean you have to be, okay?
I moved closer to him, instantly forgiving him. The warmth of his body radiated out toward mine, and I pressed myself along the length of him. I wrapped my arms around him and kissed his jaw.
I thought we were going to wait until you broke up with Tyler to be all couply,
Derek said. I could hear a smile on his lips as they pressed against mine. I'd planned to break up with Tyler when he came over before leaving for Seattle, but he'd canceled, saying he was too busy packing. Technically, that meant we were still together. I didn't care.
I know.
I slid my tongue along his teeth and deepened the kiss anyway.
We should stop, then,
Derek murmured.
Yep.
But we didn't. Instead, I lifted his shirt to touch the hot skin on his back. He cupped my butt and pulled me closer, our thighs pressed together. I wanted him like I'd never wanted anything in my life. The sound of a car approaching finally tore us apart. I ran my fingertips across my lips, the imprint of his mouth still burning.
We should go, I said.
Derek nodded and we dove into the woods that separated my house from his, holding hands.
So, when are you going to talk to Tyler?
Derek asked, holding up a tree branch so I could pass. I ducked under his arm and climbed over a downed tree.
I should probably do it in person, right? Wouldn't that be, like, more respectful?
Tyler was already going through so much. I didn't want to hurt him more than I had to. Derek replied noncommittally. I was going to when he was here. He just left so suddenly.
What a weirdo.
Derek shook his head.
If I were moving away from my girlfriend for the summer, I'd make sure I said goodbye first.
Yeah, but his parents are going through this intense divorce, and it's really shit for him right now.
We emerged from the woods into the sunlight and crossed the street to my house. I could hear the crash of the surf in the distance and smell the sea salt in the hazy summer air. Just as I was opening the front door, my phone rang from my back pocket.
Hi, Mom,
I answered cheerfully. Hi, sweetie. Just calling to make sure you're okay. I rolled my eyes at Derek and mouthed that it was my mom. I'm not a baby, Mom. She laughed and gave me her standard answer. I know, but you'll always be my baby. I chuckled a little, but it was kind of getting old. Anyway, she said, you forgot to call me at noon, so I was getting a bit worried. Whoops. I glanced at the clock. It was 12:11 p.m. Guess I lost track of time. Sorry. That's okay. What do you think about Safeway roast chicken for dinner? Is it okay if I eat at Madison's? I asked. Sure, sweetie. She sounded disappointed, and guilt made my stomach spasm. Just be home by dark. That's like 9 o'clock. How about 10? Okay, but I'll come pick you up. I don't want you walking home in the dark. How about I get Derek to drive me? She thought about that for a minute and agreed. He flashed me that slow grin just as there was a knock on the door. Okay, Mom, gotta go. I'm heading to Madison's. Bye! I hung up before she could reply and rushed to the door. Kendall had cut her hair into a sleek, shoulder-length bob. Gone was the schoolgirl Catholic uniform. Instead, she wore trendy skinny black jeans, black high-top Converses, and a form-fitting pink tank top under a black leather jacket. She looked very biker chic. She air-kissed me in a way that felt overly familiar, then breezed past me into the living room. I like your hair, I said awkwardly, still clutching the door handle. Thanks. She spotted Derek and extended a hand. I'm Kendall. Her heavily mascaraed eyelashes fluttered, and jealousy stabbed at me. She was so like me, but like me on some performance-enhancing drug. The way she looked, acted, dressed, everything just slightly better. Derek had to see it, too. Derek shook her hand and introduced himself. I shut the door and stood awkwardly, unsure what to do or say. Kendall tossed her expensive black leather bag onto the couch and flopped down next to it, looking around. For the first time, I saw my house through somebody else's eyes. The old, overstuffed tan sofas were rubbed raw. The River Rock fireplace at the far side of the living room looked dreary. The sunny breakfast nook at the back of the kitchen was in need of a fresh coat of paint. Your house is super cute, Kendall said. I couldn't help but take it patronizingly. Derek cleared his throat and came to take my hand. He led me to the couch and we sat next to Kendall.
You said your dad owned a house here in 1999,
he said.
Do you have any other information to, I don't know, show he's related to Olivia?
Kendall lifted her shoulders and reached up to twirl a massive diamond earring in her right ear.
Sorry, I really don't. I mean, how do we even know he is?
My aunt told me my mom and your dad had an affair right before your parents got married, I said. They were together a few months, she got pregnant, and he disappeared. Her eyes flashed with interest.
Shit. Really?
I nodded. Kendall chewed her cheek.
I can ask, but I don't think he's going to admit anything. Like, I said, it's an election year. Plus, our money comes from my mom's side. I doubt he'd give that up.
She gave a harsh, metallic laugh that made my stomach clench angrily. She might resent him, but at least he'd stuck around for her. She stood and paced the living room, tapping her chin, deep in thought. Suddenly, she spun to face me.
I know. Why don't you come to meet him? You could ask him yourself.
I laughed, skeptical. Why would he talk to me? I mean, sometimes I hate him because he, like, mortifies me, but he's not a bad guy. I bet he doesn't even know about you. Did your mom ever tell him she was pregnant? I wondered that myself. Had she told him? Had she even given him a chance to know me? I was about to answer when she caught sight of the book sitting on the dining room table. She picked it up. Hey, I love Gail Forman, she exclaimed. Have you read Just One Day? I nodded, my head dizzy at the sudden change of subject. Yeah, I own all her books. I have all of John Green's books, too. I get, like, the whole set and read them all in a row. No way! Can I see them? Yeah, they're in my room.
I'll leave you girls to it, Derek said.
He kissed me on the cheek and gave a funny little salute to Kendall. Once the door shut behind him, she lifted one eyebrow at me and smirked. Hot friend or older boyfriend?
Neither, I blushed. I mean, it's complicated.
I see. She winked at me. I get the hint. But I didn't think she did. She had that look about her that girls get when they think the chase is on. Kendall's eyes widened when we entered my room. Holy shit, she exclaimed.
I swept dirty clothes from the floor into the laundry hamper, totally mortified. But Kendall wasn't looking at the mess. She was staring at the medals, ribbons, and trophies displayed in a glass case attached to the wall. Mom had found it at a garage sale and meticulously took it apart, brought it home, then reassembled it in my room shortly after I started competing in swimming when I was 10. I think she built it to remind me how awesome it was to win, which worked for a while. Lately, though, I didn't care as much about winning. It wasn't like I was going to swim in the Olympics or anything. I probably wouldn't even swim once I went to college. I'd been thinking lately maybe I'd study history. I liked the way you could almost predict what was going to happen in the future based on the past. I don't think I have any medals for anything, Kendall said.
Do you do sports?
I asked, feigning innocence. I knew she did, but I didn't want her knowing I'd Googled her like some total creeper.
Yeah, tennis? And I'm on the debate team, but we don't get medals, and...
She laughed.
I'm crap at tennis. I only do it 'cause my dad makes me.
She stared again at my trophies and medals.
What's it like?
What's what like?
Winning.
I thought about it. It's great at first, but then you have to keep doing better every time. It's exhausting.
Why don't you quit?
She asked as if it were so simple. I don't want to let anybody down. She sat on the edge of my bed. I thought she'd say how stupid that was, but she didn't. She got it. Even though I didn't really know her that well, I could tell she knew exactly how it felt to be stuck in something that defined you, even though you didn't want it to. She pulled a crumpled pack of cigarettes out of her back pocket.
Mind if I smoke?
She asked. But she said it that way some people have of asking but not really asking. I hated cigarettes, but I knew I couldn't stop her.
Sure, but hold on a sec.
I opened my window all the way, then raced downstairs and grabbed a small plate from the kitchen.
Here.
I handed her the plate.
I don't want my mom to know.
She took a long drag on the cigarette, then blew the smoke out the window. She held it weird, between her pointer finger and her thumb. We talked about school, how bitchy the girls could be, what colleges we wanted to go to. I decided I liked Kendall. She seemed a bit spoiled, maybe entitled was a better word,
but I was glad we'd finally met up. And it was cool that she might be my sister. I'd always wanted siblings. Growing up with just my mom was a bit lonely. When I was little and hanging out at Madison and Derek's house, I'd pretend they were my brother and sister. I knew Madison and Derek annoyed the shit out of each other, but when it really came right down to it, they'd do anything for each other. I wished I had that. My iPhone pinged, and I pulled it out of my back pocket. It was a text with a picture attached. Somebody had snapped me outside the chemistry lab. They'd drawn devil horns on my head and a red line across my throat, drops of blood dripping down the picture. Something in the background caught my eye, a reflection in one of the chem lab's windows. I zoomed in. The reflection had caught someone taking a picture of me, but a glint of light blurred the picture too much. I couldn't tell who it was. But I could read the message. Die, bitch.
Chapter 22. Abby. November. Night was slowly falling around Mercer Island, the big leaf maples lining the road barely visible against the inky sky as Anthony drove us to the Montgomery's house. I stared out the passenger side window, silently quaking, terrified that Gavin would be there too. The last time I'd seen him, he told me he'd kill me and my baby if anybody found out about us. I knew it wasn't an idle threat. The summer I met Gavin, he was interning in Senator George Winter's office, dating the boss's daughter. Obviously, he didn't want Winters finding out about us, so our relationship was clandestine. Usually, we met for a quickie on the beach or in the back of his car. I fell in love with him hard and fast, but only in hindsight did I realize that to him, I was just a bit of illicit sex on the side, the kind that men with a superiority complex engage in because they think they're entitled to it. One evening, as the summer was drawing to a close, we were walking back to town from our secret spot on the beach. I saw the silhouette of a man coming toward us. The moon outlined him, revealing a narrow, wolfish, pockmarked face. I tripped on a ridge in the pavement, knocking into him just as he passed. "Watch it!" he cried. Gavin stopped walking and stared at the man, who was now hurrying away. Something slid over his face then, something like calculation. "Wait here," he said, his voice hard and cold. He crossed the road and was quickly swallowed up by the weighted darkness and the whispering pines along the beach. Time ticked by at an excruciating pace. Finally, Gavin reappeared, but his hair was mussed, his blazer crumpled, something dark, dirt, on his pants. "Let's get out of here." He walked quickly toward town. I hurried after him. "What's going on?" A giant pulse inside my chest beat hot, then cold with fear. "Did he hurt you?" Gavin's eyes glistened in the yellow glow of a streetlight. "Of course not. I just had a talk with him."
"Why? Who?"
"Shut up!" Gavin whirled to me, his face a menacing mask. "Stop with your incessant questions!" I let it go then, because honestly, I didn't want to know the truth. I loved him. I didn't want to see anything negative in him. The next day, I saw on the news that a man accusing George Winters of misconduct was in the hospital after a robbery gone wrong. A quick snap of his face showed a bloodied, misshapen nose and deep bruising around his neck, as if somebody had tried to strangle him. A few days later, the man withdrew the lawsuit. At the end of the summer, Gavin was given a permanent position in Winter's office and quickly rocketed through the political establishment. That was when I knew Gavin was capable of doing just about anything for his career. So when he threatened to kill my baby and me, I knew unequivocally he meant it. I loosened the scarf around my neck as Anthony buzzed the intercom at a set of ornate black iron gates.
Fear was an invisible rope tightening around my throat. Anthony asked for Kendall, and a minute later the gates rolled open. We drove along an expansive driveway that fringed a palatial three-story limestone house. Giant windows, a wrought iron patio, and an elaborately designed stone chimney decorated the facade. To the left, the driveway swept to a four-car garage. In front of us, a set of stairs led to two oversized arches framing a solid oak door. Kendall met us at the door, and I knew her instantly. She bore such a striking resemblance to Olivia, it took my breath away. But then our eyes met, and I could see immediately she was nothing like my daughter. Olivia was gentle and innocent. She was all soft edges and sweet smiles. This girl was hard and worldly. Insolence hung about her like a cloud of fruit flies around day-old watermelon. Kendall wore a crisply starched, white-collared shirt topped with a navy blazer she'd pushed up to the elbows. Tight black leggings rolled down to knee-high brown boots. "You're Olivia's mom," Kendall said softly. The sneer had dropped from her face. I nodded, my tongue stuck fast in my mouth. "I was really sorry to hear about Olivia." I dipped my head. "Thanks. Do you mind if we ask you a few questions?" She lifted her shoulders and flicked her expensive streaky bob behind her ear. "Whatevs? Come in." We followed her into the foyer, a high-ceilinged affair with large, blurry impressionist paintings of flowers, then down a long hallway to an elegant living room. A colossal stone fireplace stood at one end, accented by two cream leather couches. On the other side of the room was an antique wooden table holding a bowl of fresh flowers and an impressive floor-to-ceiling mahogany bookshelf. Kendall sat on one of the couches while Anthony and I sat on the other. "You already know I'm Abby," I said. "This is Anthony. He works for the Seattle Police Department." I was careful not to say what he did for the SPD. It was only partly a lie. Kendall settled back against the cream of the sofa and crossed her ankles. "What did you want to know?" "Well, how did you meet Olivia?" "It was totally random, actually." She laughed, a polished, bell-like laugh, and reached up to twirl a diamond earring in her right ear. Her fingernails were painted black. "Our high schools were both at a college tour in April. We saw each other, and obviously we look a lot alike. So we got to talking." "About what?" Anthony asked. She pursed her lips, like she was trying to think. "She said she was from Portage Point, and I told her that's where my mom's from, too. And that was it, really. Later we became Facebook friends and started hanging. She told me she thought my dad might be her dad, and she wanted to meet."
"And did you?" Anthony asked.
"Well, yeah. I mean, she seemed cool and all, so I wanted to help."
"Where'd you meet?"
"At her house."
"What did you talk about?"
"She told me her aunt said you had, she glanced at me and cleared her throat, "an affair with my dad, and she thought he was her dad, too. I told her she should come here and meet him, but I doubted if he'd admit anything." Her face turned nasty, an ugly sneer marring her delicate features. "It's an election year, and he wouldn't want anything to ruin that."
"There was one weird thing," she continued. "She got this really creepy text. It was totally effed up."
"What did it say?" I asked. "It said..." She hesitated briefly. "It said, 'Die, bitch.'" My brain struggled to sweep through the cobwebs of information. So Kendall had been there when Olivia received one of the texts. I opened my mouth to ask if Olivia had any idea who'd sent it, but a loud shout cut me off.
"Kendall!"
The angry voice was deep and masculine, coming from right outside the living room door.
"Kendall, whose car is that? I told you no press right now."
I jumped up, heart slamming in my chest at the familiar voice.
"Gavin."
Fear
metallic as a penny, vibrated against my tongue. A tight ball lodged in my throat, and the room felt suddenly airless. Anthony stood and touched my arm. His presence brought me comfort. But my fears were deeper than simply physical. I was scared of what I'd find out. "In here, Dad," Kendall called. She leaned back against the couch and crossed her ankles, showing off her knee-high boots.
"What are you up to, Kendall?"
Gavin's face was creased with irritation as he entered the room. But as soon as he saw us, a charming smile smoothed his handsome features. Just like when we were younger, Gavin's presence filled the room. He was, if possible, even more handsome now. The years melted away as he recognized me. His face momentarily dropped in shock. Dressed in a navy blue suit with a crisp white shirt and a blue pinstriped tie, he had just enough silver at his temples to look distinguished. His broad shoulders and confident frame gave off an aura that said, "Trust me." His square jaw indicated strength and power. He looked every bit the power player I'd met all those years ago. It was no wonder Washington State voters were beguiled by him. You just looked at him and felt compelled to follow.
"Abby," he said,
his eyebrows high on his forehead. I flushed at the sound of my name, but kept my face blank. He kissed me on the cheek in greeting. He smelled expensive, faintly of citrus like acqua di Parma.
"It's been a long time. How are you?"
"Hello, Gavin." My mouth felt full of cotton. I tried to keep my voice even, but I heard it. I sounded pathetic and weak. Kendall watched her father, her head tilted to one side. And my God, she had a smile on her lips. She was enjoying his discomfort.
"So, you know Abigail Knight, Dad?"
Gavin turned to Kendall, looking somewhat uncomfortable.
"Abby and I were friends a long time ago."
"And this is Anthony, with the Seattle Police Department," Kendall said, her eyebrows raised in a mocking gesture. "They're here to talk to us about Olivia Knight. You know, the tragic accident that happened last month in Portage Point? It's been all over the news. Abby is Olivia's mom."
"I'm sorry for your loss," Gavin said immediately.
He blew his mouth out and tilted his chin down in a calculated conveyance of sympathy. He looked like a blowfish with neck pain.
"I'm not sure how we can help. We didn't know your daughter."
"Actually, Kendall did know Olivia. We were just discussing how they met," Anthony said. Gavin's smile dropped just a hair.
"Oh."
He arranged the smile back on his face as easily as if he were draping clothes on a clothesline.
"Is my daughter being questioned?"
He crossed to Kendall and put a hand on her shoulder.
Jesus. They looked so much alike.
So much like Olivia. All of them with their blonde hair and forest green eyes, their sharp Slavic cheekbones, and the slightly off-center cleft in their chins?
"No. Not at all."
The laid-back smile didn't match the steel in Anthony's eyes. The tension in the air tightened a notch. Nothing tangible, nothing concrete. In fact, on the surface, everybody looked polite and pleasant. But it was there, snaking around us like a noxious gas. The men sized each other up, and I couldn't help but compare them. Gavin, with his clean-shaven face, his perfectly pressed suit, his athletic body. Anthony, with his tousled curls, his three-day stubble, his casual canvas coat. He was so decent, so accepting of people and of life. Gavin had none of that quiet kindness in him. He was all bluster, no substance.
"Well, I have complete confidence the police know what they're doing. If you have any further questions, you'll need to address them to my lawyer."
He had the air of someone who imagines he can negotiate with gravity. I hated him fiercely.
"I invited them here, Dad."
The lie fell smoothly off Kendall's tongue. She flipped her hair behind her ear.
"I wanted to talk to them about Olivia.
You know Olivia's brain dead, and I want to help find out what happened to her. Do you know anything about that?" She batted her eyes innocently,
and I realized she was baiting him. An undercurrent flowed between father and daughter that I didn't entirely understand. Gavin clenched and unclenched his fists. It was the only indication he was pissed off. Of course, I heard about Olivia's accident on the news. Absolutely tragic. Did you know Olivia? I asked. No, of course not. He spoke too quickly. He was lying. He did it as easily as water flowing over a waterfall. Hot waves of anger washed over me. A high-pitched buzzing rang in my ears. He was involved in this. Somehow. I just didn't know how to prove it. The police wouldn't believe me, a grieving mother over Gavin Montgomery, a successful, well-respected politician. Gavin shed his navy suit jacket and meticulously folded it in half, then draped it across the back of the couch. Now, he turned to face us. He was still smiling, but his eyes had gone wintry cold. I presume you don't have a warrant, so I suggest you rethink this line of questioning. No problem, Anthony said easily. But this isn't going away. We'll be back. Bring a warrant next time, and take it to my lawyer, Gavin tossed over his shoulder as he left the room, as confident as any man who knew he was untouchable. Outside, rain had started to fall, fat drops pinging against my scalp as Anthony and I walked to his car. A wet leaf smacked against my shoe, and I kicked it free. My phone rang.
Abby, it's Brad. Have you seen Sarah?
My sister's husband sounded stressed. No, not for a few days. I cringed at the admission. Everything okay?
I don't know. She texted earlier asking me to get Dylan from school, but I haven't heard from her since. She still isn't home, but Dylan's sleeping and I can't leave him to go look for her.
Oh, God. What's wrong? Anthony asked sharply. Sarah's missing.
We'll find her. Where would she go?
I thought hard, panic spinning in my chest. To Olivia in the hospital? Or to her office?
Let's go.
I told Brad we'd call him back and got in the car. Just then a shout sounded. Wait! Kendall was running from the house. She fell dramatically against my door, her face streaked with tears. I rolled my window down and she thrust a crumpled piece of paper at me.
Olivia had this DNA test done on my dad. She asked me if she could have the results sent to me so nobody would find out. I got it right before, you know.
A tear rolled down her face. It hovered on the corner of her jaw, then splashed onto my hand, which gripped the car door where the window was rolled down. I took the paper and read it. It was unnecessary, really. I already knew Gavin was her father. Did Olivia see this? Did she know for sure? I asked urgently.
Yeah.
Her voice cracked like a piece of old leather.
I called her that day. She said she was going to talk to him about it. I think she confronted him. If the media found out about Olivia, or if my mom did...
Kendall snorted a laugh, even though she clearly didn't think it was funny. She'd leave him in a heartbeat and take her money with her. Chapter 23 Abby November. Anthony pulled up at the hospital, and I dashed inside, up the stairs to Olivia's room. But Sarah wasn't there. I gave my girl a quick kiss on the cheek and told her we were looking for her aunt, but I'd be back soon. We drove to the strip mall, where Sarah rented space for her counseling sessions. But as soon as we got there, I knew she wasn't there. The lights were dark, and the doors locked tight. I banged my hand against my forehead.
We'll find her, Anthony reassured me.
This is my fault, I moaned.
Of course it isn't.
But I knew he was wrong. The closer I got to the truth about Olivia, the more I'd pushed Sarah away. The one person who'd always been there for me, no matter what. I didn't want to deal with how I'd feel if she left me, too. Maybe that was why I isolated myself. Not just from her, but from everyone. It was easier to hide. And suddenly, I knew where Sarah was. After our mother died,
Sarah had spent a lot of time at her grave. We never talked about it. Sarah didn't want to talk, which was ironic, considering she'd chosen counseling as a career. I only found out years later when she admitted to me she went nearly every day after dropping me off at school. She said it was where she went to hide. When we pulled up to the cemetery, it was pitch black. Anthony grabbed a flashlight from the trunk and swept it along the pathway in front of us as I led him to my mother's grave. After a few minutes, the flashlight illuminated Sarah's face. She was sitting on the ground, her back against our mother's headstone.
"Sarah!"
I rushed toward my sister and knelt in the grass next to her, the knees of my jeans immediately soaking through. Sarah started crying when she saw me, great heaving sobs. She looked like she'd been crying all day. Her eyes were so puffy, she peered at me through slits. An open fifth of whiskey was propped against the marble headstone. Anthony took my phone and texted Brad, while I turned to Sarah, suddenly furious.
"Jesus, Sarah, you scared me. Brad's been worried sick. What were you thinking?"
"Abby," she sobbed, "I fucked up. I've really fucked up."
"I doubt that. Sarah never fucked up. She was perfect, selfless as a saint. When our mother died, she'd boxed up all my things and moved me in with her. She sat with me as I did my homework every night, papers spread across the wobbly veneered kitchen table, the smell of cardboard pizza and cheap TV dinners thick in the air. She'd worked evenings so she could watch Olivia during the days while I finished college. Sarah was relentlessly competent and infinitely proficient. She never made mistakes.
"I didn't know it would hurt you your whole life. I would have done it differently."
Sarah pushed the heels of her hands against her eyes, her mouth contorting on a sob. I glanced at Anthony. "What are you talking about?"
"You said you never got any closure after Mom died. You said it broke you."
"Yeah, but..."
"Mom left a note."
I let go of Sarah and swayed backward as memories of that day rushed at me. The day my mom had killed herself dawned bright and blue, but with a sharp chill to the air. Halloween was just a few days away, and pumpkins sat on the front porches of most of the houses in the neighborhood, their sinister mouths and jagged teeth grinning at me. I woke to the sound of her vacuuming her office, where she only went when something was wrong. I huddled under my covers longer than normal, just to avoid her. She could be like that, happy one day, withdrawing into a shell the next. I got dressed, ate some cereal, brushed my teeth. But when it was time for her to drive me to school, she was still cleaning. I opened the door to her office, and she was on her hands and knees, scrubbing the floor.
"Mom, I'm late for school."
"You're not going."
"What? Why?"
She didn't answer, just kept scrubbing.
"Mom, why?"
She looked at me for a long moment, her expression unreadable. Her blue eyes were wide, veined with red. Suddenly, she scrambled to her feet and shoved past me. In my room, she grabbed my backpack and filled it with dirty clothes from my hamper in my closet.
"Get in the car," she said. "I'll take you to Sarah's."
Her face looked weird, pale and stressed. She was sweating, not just a bit of moisture, but actual drops that trickled down the side of her face and filled the dip of her throat. At Sarah's apartment, she dragged me up the stairs, her hand like a shackle around my wrist. She pushed me down until I sat on the muddy mat, then leaned into my face.
"You stay right here," she hissed.
Her eyes were dilated, the blue edged out by a darkness so great I almost didn't recognize her.
"Mom,"
I whined, angry and feeling the first whispers of panic at the thought of being left alone.
"Where are you going? I don't want to wait here."
"Sarah will be home soon."
"What if she isn't?"
"Trust me."
She started to walk away.
"You are such a freak."
I scrambled to my feet.
"You can't just leave me here all by myself."
Mom came back fast. For a second, I thought she'd hit me, but instead she hugged me so tight it hurt my ribcage.
"What does Mommy always say?"
she asked, kneeling in front of me. I rolled my eyes. I hadn't called her Mommy in years.
"Whenever, whatever, I'm here forever," I recited.
"That's my girl."
She touched her fingertips lightly to my chest, her eyes glistening.
"Forever."
Then she straightened and walked away.
"Mom! Mom!"
I stomped the ground furiously. I waited a minute, and when she didn't reply, I yelled,
"Fine, go then! I don't care if you leave!"
The only sound was the screech of the car wheels as she gunned it out of the parking lot. I waited more than an hour, my emotions veering between fear and anger. Finally, Sarah appeared at the end of the hallway, home from college.
"What are you... Where's Mom?" she asked, her eyebrows crumpling.
"She left," I scowled.
"She left you here? When?"
Sarah's voice pitched high.
"I don't know. An hour ago?"
Sarah's fingers dug into my shoulders. Her face had turned the color of old putty.
"Think, Abby. Where was Mom going?"
"I don't know. She didn't say."
Sarah grabbed my hand and we ran to her car. When we pulled up to our faded two-story clapboard house, I burst out of the car, an acidic sensation wheeling in my stomach. I could hear the leaves we'd raked just yesterday crunch under my feet as I pounded across the yard to the front door.
"Mom!"
I shouted, flinging the front door open.
"Abby, come here!"
Sarah was right behind me, but I darted out of her reach. She was always telling me what to do. I ran up the stairs to Mom's office and pushed open the door. The first thing that hit me was the smell, as if somebody had lit off a firework. Mom was slumped over her desk, the wall behind her sprayed with something dark. Her fingers still clutched a gun. I'd never seen a gun in real life before. Sarah crashed into me, shouting my name, but I couldn't hear anything anymore. Nothing registered. All I could do was wonder where that gun came from. I shoved Sarah away and turned to vomit all over my mom's nice, clean carpet. The peculiar numbness of psychological shock was settling over me. Suicide of a parent, that type of abandonment, it did things to a person. It didn't take a shrink to tell me that I didn't trust people to stay because my mom had promised she'd be there and then wasn't. I was terrified that there was some deep flaw inside of me that had made her leave, that made everybody leave. That worry had clawed its way into me, cemented by life's hairpin turns and sudden drop-offs.
"Mom left a note?"
I said, my voice a ragged whisper. Sarah nodded.
"I hid it from you. I'm sorry."
"Where is it?"
"You won't get any closure from it," she said.
"Words on paper won't make what she did logical."
I held my hand out. Sarah pulled a crumpled piece of paper from her coat pocket, smoothed it against her thigh, and handed it to me. When I opened it, I noticed dark flecks sprayed across it. There wasn't really much to read. "I don't want this world. I don't want to be your mother. I can't handle it. I don't want..." The note ended abruptly in the middle of her sentence. No final stop, no resolution, as if she'd realized mid-note what she was going to do. I let go of the note. It floated like a feather through the air and landed gently in the mud at Sarah's feet. "I don't want to be your mother."
"Mom had bipolar disorder, Abby. She wasn't well."
My mind flashed back to my recurring dream of my mother and me on the roof, and I knew it wasn't a dream. Other memories assaulted me. Mom screaming at Sarah because she'd shrunk a sweater in a hot wash, waking after a bad dream and finding her furiously painting the bathroom after a 3 a.m. run to Walmart. That night, on the roof, my voice was weak with shock. "You saved me." Sarah nodded.
"Yes,
Mom told you that you could fly. Why didn't you call social services? I was a teenager. I couldn't take care of you. And I was scared. I didn't want you to go into foster care. Then she got better. She got some counseling. Took her meds every day. But then I started noticing little things. She'd forget to pick you up from school, or she'd go on manic spending sprees. I should have known she was spiraling. Anthony had been listening to us talk, but now he turned off the flashlight and handed it to me. "I'll be in the car when you need me," he said quietly. I watched him walk away, then moved the bottle of whiskey and sat next to Sarah, our backs against our mother's headstone. "I thought it was my fault," I said, scrubbing a hand over my eyes. "That last day? God, I've never told anybody this. When she dropped me off at your place, I called her a freak. I said I didn't care if she left. Next thing I knew, she was dead. I thought it was my fault." "No, Abby. Mom was sick. I saw all the signs. I shouldn't have let you go in there first." Her voice strangled, but she kept going. "When I saw her note, I put it in my pocket so you wouldn't think it was your fault. I was selfish, thinking I could fix it for you. I wanted to protect you. And Olivia? God, I've been so arrogant. Maybe if I told you she knew about Gavin..." Sarah started crying again. "No. It isn't your fault. None of it. I'm sorry I said it was. I hope you know I didn't mean it." Suddenly, it made perfect sense. Mom hadn't left me because she didn't want me. She'd withdrawn, pushed me away because she was more damaged than I ever knew. I didn't understand her mental illness, but I knew one thing. Being a mother wasn't something you just handled. Olivia had saved me, and if Mom had been mentally stable, I would have been enough to save her. Her death didn't have anything to do with me at all. I grabbed the fifth of whiskey and took a swig. Sarah had barely touched it. The liquor stung, but I swallowed it anyway. I didn't want to be like my mom, hiding from the world, pushing the people who cared for me away. I wanted to connect and experience my life. "You have the truth about Mom. Now can you say goodbye?" Sarah said, her voice husky from crying. "I'm gonna try," I replied honestly. "Once you get the truth about Olivia, you'll still have to say goodbye to her. Nothing's going to change that." "I know." I leaned my head against my sister's shoulder, and she put an arm around me. "I know." Sarah brushed my hair off my face and kissed my forehead. And for the first time in a long time, I didn't pull away.
Chapter 24. Olivia. July. A loud knocking on the front door shook me awake. I blinked against the sun beaming brightly through my window, disoriented and half asleep. The knock came again, and I jolted out of bed. I pulled a pair of shorts on over my underwear and hurried down the stairs. "Tyler?" I gasped when I opened the door. I hadn't seen him since right after school got out, and other than a few texts, we hadn't even spoken.
"Hi, babe,"
Tyler said with a grin. He swept past me into the room as I stood speechless, the doorknob still clutched in my hand. He held his arms open. I hesitated. My still half-asleep brain reeled. I'd have to hug him, of course, but I didn't move. His arms dropped to his sides and his face crumpled into that dejected, heartbroken look I'd seen so often since his parents' breakup.
"What's wrong?"
he asked. "Nothing." I hugged him quickly, then sat on the couch and pulled my knees to my chest, suddenly feeling underdressed. "I'm just still waking up. What are you doing here?"
"What do you mean? I told you I was coming this week."
You said the weekend.
Oh, well, I meant this week. It's not a problem, right? You don't have plans with your secret other boyfriend.
His words were casual, teasing, but there was a weird look in his eyes I'd never seen before. It was time to tell him the truth, I decided. I swallowed hard, working out the right words to say. I'd never broken up with someone before. I didn't want to hurt Tyler's feelings, especially with all he'd been through lately. Tyler dropped onto the couch and reached for me.
Come here. I haven't seen you in weeks, and we've barely even spoken lately. Why are you so far away?
I scooted a few inches closer, a sickening lump pulsing in my stomach. I felt like I was betraying Derek, even though technically I was betraying Tyler by being with Derek. God, I'd made such a mess of things. How's your dad? I asked, hoping to distract him from holding me. And Seattle? Do you like living there? Tyler scowled and shook his head. He pressed his knuckles against his knees until they cracked loudly. I cringed.
I hate it. I'd stay at my mom's, but I can't stand being around her. She's sucking up so hardcore, like that'll make it any better. She bought me some golf clubs and said she's taking me to Barbados for Christmas this year, but I hate her. She's the one who cheated, fucking bitch.
His eyes